Hi everyone, this is Matt Price, one of the hosts for the longest-running Dynasty-focused podcast on the planet, the DLF Dynasty Podcast. Each week, we'll bring you an episode packed with relevant and actionable Dynasty information that you can use to help win your league. When I'm in the host chair, we might even play a game or two. We are always open to topic suggestions, so if there's something you'd like to hear us discuss, please let us know. Thanks for listening.
Hello and welcome back to the Dynasty Crossroads. My name is Peter Howard at PA Howdy on Twitter. This is, in fact, a member of the DLF family of podcasts. Welcome in. This is the third part of my conversation with Tom Kisslingberry from England and also mostly IDP fame, but we're both content creators over at Dynasty League Football, and Tom knows an awful lot about offense as well. Recommend everyone check him out. Obviously, if you listen to part one or two, you already know he's worth listening to. In this third part, we start to talk about wide receivers a lot more, sophomore, and wide receivers specifically that we might want to target, but also a few other names turn up later on. For example, we're talking about the Arizona situation before we knew that Bill O'Brien will literally trade you his diamonds for, I don't know, what is that, ramen coupons that he got for DeAndre Hopkins? Needless to say, that exaggerates my fears around the wide receiver core and how deep it is. I still have a lot of hope for Christian Kirk. Andy Isabella drops a little bit in his potential. And that's not because there are less targets available and that typical myth. It's just because there's, frankly, a limited number of players that are on the field at any one time. And even Arizona targeting their wide receivers at one of the highest rates since 2009. Actually ranks 23rd, by the way. I've been recently doing research on my projections for 2020 and looking at wide receiver, tight end, and running back usage in the passing game. And despite the high level of wide receiver usage for Arizona in 2019. Come on, Pete. Don't go too far back in time. It still only ranks 23rd, the 23rd most targeted position for any team since 2009. So, like, we've seen a lot higher usage before. That rate actually correlates year over year to about 27%, which is slightly higher than tight end. So it's a little more trustable, but 27% of the variance is almost nothing. So we can see a large amount of change in that number. Sorry, I just realized I'm recording a second podcast here. Arizona wide receivers are an interesting proposition for 2020. Me and Tom talk about them, but it's before the DeAndre Hopkins trade. I think most of what we said actually still fits. It's just, you know, now a further downgrade for someone like Andy Isabella. Really hope you enjoy the conversation. There's some really interesting deep names from the 2020 class we talked about in here, and personally I always love those deep name flyers, and there are always a great number of them at wide receiver, to be honest with you, and Tom's had some really interesting thoughts on them, so I enjoyed it. I hope you do too. This concludes my entire interview with Tom Kisslingberry, so don't worry, there's not going to be a fourth and fifth and sixth part. This is the final part. Hopefully I'll get to talk to Tom again sometime soon. And I can't wait to have him back on the podcast. It was a joy. Thanks again. Hit us up at Dynasty Crossroads. Hit me up at PA Howdy. Hit Tom up at Tom Kisslingberry. And I know it's a difficult name to spell, but it's in the show notes. And we'll see you again next week on the Crossroads. Thanks very much. Hope you're happy, healthy, and safe. Bye. Like, I just got into a conversation about Marcus Brown and some other interesting names, Calvin Harmon and Preston Williams from last year's class. Mm-hmm. I know, you know, people are probably talking more about Deontay Johnson, but those three are the ones that I'm mostly interested in understanding right now. Do you have
basically, just to recap, we all loved Kelvin Harmon, right? We thought he was a fantastic player. In one league where we draft rookies before the NFL draft, I spent like the 107 on him or something like that. And then he dropped all the way to the sixth round, and I was sitting there watching my value go, ooh. So everyone got out on him, and Washington was clearly a tire fire, so nobody enjoyed that at all. And I'm not sure that people really noticed how much Kelvin Harmon was used late in the season. He basically, after their bye week in week 10, and obviously the coaching changed, he was sort of out there running routes on every single snap, and he started getting a little bit more usage and looking okay. So I am sort of cautiously confident about him being at least useful. And when we say useful, we're talking about wide receiver three, if he's lucky. But that's a lot better than it looked for most of last year. What do you think about him?
Yeah, basically the exact same story on Harmon there for his sixth round draft pick. Looking at it through expected points, he got 70 expected points last year, or 70.7 if you want to be really nerdy about it. He was a little inefficient, minus 4.2 fantasy points under expected. The model takes that into account and drops him a little bit. But based on the fact this is his rookie season, and it's comparing past rookie seasons to what they did the following year, it actually projects him for around wide receiver three level volume, which is pretty impressive. And something I haven't mentioned, which I should have, this my models, these two little things are also taking into account draft picks. And so where he was like pick 206, it actually takes away about nine to 10 of those expected points, because it's saying he's lower drafted, therefore he's less likely to get as much volume. But that still puts him in the wide receiver three range, which is really interesting for a guy I'm not sure anyone remembers still exists. And where everyone wants Terry McLaurin, and I get it, I'm going to have to take the loss on him. Everyone else is going to be right. He's Michael Thomas II, only a very different player, obviously. Whatever. Even if I accept all of that, like Harmon coming up, like you said, late in that year, like he's just under Preston Williams, who I think more people remember because he got injured, Devontae Parker took over, and everything else. So Harmon turning up this way, when looking at the opportunity, how efficient he was, and where he was drafted, and still getting potentially wide receiver three numbers, that's why I asked you about him. That's really interesting. So yeah, really fascinating. I almost want to go back in on my Kelvin Harmon love because of it.
You talk about Preston Williams as well, and he terrifies me. And he's one of those players. I see this weird phenomenon, and I'm interested to see if you see it as well, that we as fantasy owners value much more players that we got free or from waiver wires or who had some sort of explosion of value than we do people we paid more in terms of assets to get hold of, because everyone loves this idea that you pick this guy up for nothing on waivers, nobody wanted him, and he suddenly became great, right? Like Stephon Diggs or Arian Foster or someone like that. And I think Preston Williams is one of those, because he obviously wasn't much heralded, and sort of people got on him early and thought he was going to be amazing. So everyone's got this inflated opinion of him, but I don't see any way the Dolphins are going to be good again next year. They've got maybe one offensive lineman who's worthy of the name. So I don't know how they're going to get a quarterback and another four linemen and everything else they need on this team. Cause they're Dolphins and they tend to go for the shiny thing, and they'll probably draft a wide receiver and a running back early or something like that. So if they're not going to be good, then it's going to be difficult to see Preston Williams really getting a lot of volume or efficiency.
Yeah, there's some kind of conflict in the Dolphins, and this is why ignoring teams is sometimes helpful. Like, I'm not so worried about a situation where wide receiver works a little different. I'm less concerned with draft capital. I think they can make themselves relevant a little bit more than running backs. Like, for example, this little expected point thing I made just takes 30 expected points right off the top because he's an undrafted free agent. They're like, nope. Mm. But I am also aware, just tracking these things for long enough, that teams can get forced into using them. But there is a weird conflict in the Dolphins, I've spoken about before, where they seem to get fairly good profiles or prospects late in drafts and then refuse to use them until it's nearly time to get rid of them. Like Rishard Matthews is the case study here, where he was just never used. And then in his contract year, and they had no choice, they put him on the field. It's like, oh, look, there's a wide receiver too. And then they had to lose him. And he didn't, you know, blow up when he went to Tennessee, but he continued to be a good NFL player. So what the hell were the Dolphins doing? Because they had no good NFL players outside of Jarvis Landry before that. Like, he could have been helping them. And they seem to do this perpetually year after year. And occasionally someone like Rishard Matthews forces himself onto the field, or Preston Williams. So yeah, it's awkward to read the Dolphins that way. If I just ignore that, like, he comes up as well next year as N'Keal Harry does. And that's because N'Keal Harry gets a boost for being a first round pick, and Preston Williams gets dinged for being an undrafted free agent. And where I think these players can force the issue a little bit more because of their skills, and then at running back,
Like, I'm right at value with Preston Williams. I think he's got top 24 upside. I think he's valued slightly below that, or a lot below that, because he's an undrafted free agent. So he's more likely the guy I'm going to hold on out hope for. And that's where I go with it. Like, it felt like I had more to say, and then I was like, no, I think I got to the end of it.
Well, that's really interesting. I think that's a good example of how we assess this differently, because we just come at it from different places, right? And realistically, yes, that is within his range of possibilities. But I think we've probably, you think he can be a wide receiver two. I've probably think he can be a wide receiver three. We're not that far apart. That's probably only a difference of, you know, maybe 10 or 15 catches or something like that, and 100 or 200 yards and a couple of touchdowns.
It is interesting as well, because when we're talking about dynasty, like, this is the difference between winning your league and winning value. Like, these guys might really help you out in the value department more than the competitive winning your league sense. So, and also I get to, like, love another undrafted free agent, which is a big thing for me. So I have a lot of bias here. Like, take that into account. Like, I want to hashtag undrafted free agents matter as Preston Williams puts up another 10-point game. Like, it's a deep need. So you should adjust for that in your own prospecting and your own trading in your own leagues. But yeah, I want it to happen pretty bad.
So what do you think about my boy JJ Arcega-Whiteside? Because I loved him last year, and obviously his rookie year was pretty disastrous. Yeah. Do you think there's a chance he could turn that around?
There's always a chance, man. I was really high on JJ, and I'm just taking the loss right now. Like, he doesn't have as much protection from his draft capital as Harry, and he had as about a terrible as a year. Only he wasn't injured or off the field because Tom Brady didn't like him. Like, all of that is bad. He had a Laquon Treadwell-ish introduction to the NFL with no real excuse. And to be very clear, he was a great prospect based on the way I evaluate it. Like, I have JJ Arcega-Whiteside a lot, but he just has less protection from things like draft capital. Less excuses from things like opportunity. Like, I think he was on the field a lot, rarely got targeted, which to me means he's not earning those targets, because I think targets are something you earn, not Wentz hates him or anything. And then the few times he did get targeted, like, he wasn't great with them. Anything can turn around, and I'm not going to be able to sell JJ Arcega-Whiteside, like, at all. And because there's always hope, and young wide receivers retain value a little bit. Especially going into the third, fourth season, people still want to take shots on him over running backs. But yeah, I don't see a lot of sunshine in these clouds, man.
I thought you were going to make me much happier.
And I'm sorry, Tom. Sad. I am.
Yeah, you're.
I brought you here just to crush your dreams. And he has a great rookie profile, and I do hold on to those. But I'm trying to get slightly better at it. And you track snap percentages more than I do. Like, he was on the field a lot, right? I'm not wrong on that one.
Yeah, he was. He played a decent amount in the end, but you sort of mentioned this earlier. Snaps are so much less predictive for running back wide receivers than they are for running backs. So I put a lot less stock. But he played slightly less than 500 snaps, and really a lot of those came in three games where he had to be a starter. Basically, half his snaps came in three games. So I agree with you. I think it's pretty clear the team just did not really like him or trust him, and he wasn't out there. And year two is normally cliche alert, but it's the biggest jump we see from players, right? Because they come in as rookies and they go, oh, I'm Charlie Big Potatoes, I'm so brilliant. Oh my golly, this NFL thing's really hard. And then they sort of learn in second year, and they normally get better. So
that is true.
I'm crossing my fingers, but
you know, and I want to believe in his rookie profile. Be very clear, if you want JJ Arcega-Whiteside, I'm not telling you not to get him, because I do believe in his rookie profile. But there were questions on it anyway. Like, he had so much of his production through touchdowns, which I thought maybe could be a saving grace on the Eagles. Last year, he got four targets in the red zone. He didn't do so well in contested catch situations. Like you said, he could learn a lot this offseason and come back in and completely, you know, justify our pre-draft and post-draft rankings on him. But, like, the Eagles didn't see it. To use your teams know more than I do. And he didn't force the issue by earning more targets. By the way I look at players, like, it's all kind of bad. Like, Harry and JJ Arcega-Whiteside are both in that same bucket. I'm still in on Harry because his profile was actually a lot better than JJ's, even though he had a good one.
He has a little more draft capital projection. There's a little more excuses around him because of injuries, because of, you know, Tom Brady narratives. So
that's what I want for my players. More excuses.
Yeah, exactly. And I love excuses. If they're reasonable, right? If you can find some kind of history behind it, players that have the type of rookie seasons that they do. Like, I've heard this as well. Like, yes, rookies aren't expected to do much. When I'm going down, I nearly said that in a weird way. When I'm coming down from my projection or hope from them as a rookie, from someone like Harry and JJ Segway, it's like, I do not do it lightly. I hold on to these profiles deeply, and they didn't have bad rookie seasons, or they did not produce in their rookie seasons. No one has come back so far in the histories that I've looked at from having a rookie wide receiver season as bad as these two players had. I would love if someone could find something to say, well, if you judge them this way, they compare better to these players who then did well. I can find nothing. Now, like we said, you know, outliers happen, things happen, and we like both of these players as rookies. But if we're going to, you know, be Bayesian about it or whatever, there's nothing they did in their rookie seasons that compares anything like the players that eventually turned it around. In fact, most do fairly decently in their rookie seasons, and NFL production is worth more than college production. So I want to believe in these players. I'm not going to risk losing on them just so I can, you know, stand on the hill still if they hit. But there's nothing they did in their rookie season that compares well to prospects that did well later in their career or in their second or third year. Like, I can't find any reason to have that hope outside of their rookie profile. That's where the hope lives. And that's why I go to excuses. They're narrative driven. They're not logical. It's entirely subjective. But the fact that N'Keal Harry wasn't on the field, which doesn't save past prospects, by the way, being injured is not an excuse. That's why it's not predictive. That's why I'm not going all in on Harry, on buying N'Keal Harry. I want to, but not for more than he was worth last year. I'll pay a discount, but I'm not paying more than I would have last year. I'm paying less. And same with JJ as well. Like, these players, they struggle in their rookie year, so I need excuses. Harry's got a few. JJ has almost. I can't find any decent excuse.
So here's another couple of guys then. And I think I know what you're going to say. Andy Isabella and Paris Campbell. Are we seeing that Andy Isabella was, yeah, it seems his team just thinks he was bad. And although I do believe teams know more than us, there's obviously exceptions to that. The Jets, the Dolphins, the Giants. I'm pretty sure I know more than all of them. And then Paris Campbell was sort of hurt and a bit of a gimmicky player coming out of college anyway. So are you more confident about them than I am?
I am. And I have an excuse for him. Again, it's an excuse, not something that's predictive. But JJ Seguai got less volume last year than N'Keal Harry and Preston Williams and Kelvin Harmon and JJ Seguai. So that all looks bad, literally the way I was just describing Asega and Harry. The thing with Isabella is he got so much less volume and was so much more efficient with it. Efficiency, back to the Blair Andrews positivity. Like, he didn't get enough volume for him to really meet that threshold, but he was, like, he scored at least one that I remember, a long-distance touchdown, and at least that's positive. And where his value is already below both of those players, he's a lot easier to acquire. He projects, you know, according to this, a little expected points thing, to have, again, wide receiver 3-4 volume next year based on past rookie profiles just because of his efficiency. But where he's lower in value and was last year, and he was at least efficient, he was good on the touches he got. Like, that gives me a little more hope for Andy Isabella. But again, talking about what other smart people that I listen to have said, while listening to the Trade Addicts podcast again, call back to the one I literally just listened to. They were talking about how this Arizona team doesn't seem happy with its wide receiver makeup. Larry Fitzgerald is staying on. Great, cool. We love Larry. But they've got Christian Kirk, who I like to love more than all of these players except N'Keal Harry. Has a draft capital, has been efficient on his touches, and yet the quarterback is still asking for another wide receiver, CeeDee Lamb, to be drafted. Like, it seems to be a team that's not happy with its wide receivers. It drafted 3 last year when I already thought it had 2 good ones. And, you know, learning from Tom Kislingberry, you kind of got to listen to the team sometimes. So I'm worried about Isabella and I'm worried about Kirk. but I'm in on both of them more than those other players who haven't been good with their touches so far.
That's fair. I mean, Andy Isabella, I think the truth is probably somewhere in the middle. I'm really worried about him just because his volume was so extremely low. And I get your point about efficiency, but for me, he's down at the level where small sample size just throws it out, right? He had, what, 13 targets, 9 catches, and one of them went for an 88-yard touchdown, and another went for a 55-yard touchdown. So, sure, he's quick. He managed to get three twice, but, you know, if one of those is dropped instead, then he's had, what, half of his yards for his season. So, I think that scares me a little bit. I'm not sure we can learn that much from that season.
No, not at all. All I can say is he was efficient on the touches he got. It looks bad. And the reason I'm in on him over the other two is Isabella's a throw-in in trades, whereas Harry and J.J. Arcega-Whites are probably still more of a feature of anyone you any trade you get. And so, like, that's why. It's because I'm not having to pay for him. He's a throw-in. He's an add-on. He's a third-round pick kind of a thing. Whereas J.J. Arcega-Whiteside is probably still valuable by whoever drafted him. And by the way, if you're talking to someone who's got J.J. Arcega-Whiteside on the team, send him an apology from me. I may have had something to do with that. So, you know, just like, Pete says sorry, by the way. And Harry, like seriously, people are valuing him slightly more or the same as last year, when I really think we need to come down on his likely expectation a little bit. Don't get me wrong. If I've got Harry on my team, I'm not doing it either. But I've got two jobs here. I'm playing fantasy football for fun, so I want Harry. I'm trying to give you important, useful information so that, you know, maybe I'm somewhat of value to listen and read. And that side of me has to tell you that Harry's less likely to do well in the NFL. So, yeah, I'm wearing two hats here.
Unjustified. Yeah, I'm just looking at Harry's. Harry's ADP is really strong. He's up at 36, right? So just ahead of Mike Williams of the Chargers, T.Y. Hilton, who's got multiple excellent seasons, even if he is a bit old.
Everyone hates T.Y. Hilton. It's terrible. Anyway, carry on. Yeah, he's had on McCall Hardman. His ADP is too strong for me to pay it, but as a fan, I kind of want him.
Exciting player. You know who's down there as well? And this is such a weird one, because you can't buy him and you can't sell him. Brandon Cooks.
Right. Yeah, I've tried buying him a few times because he's so low valued. I'm like, the guy was injured. He's still young. He's done nothing but good things when healthy. Like, they're just, it's a Bobby Koch role. There's some players who are always going to be perpetually undervalued, and that's Brandon Cooks, Jarvis Landry, and players like that. They're just tight ends, great for it. Like, Zach Ertz, Austin Hooper, no one is ever going to value those two guys the way they value Travis Kelce or the way they value Dallas Goedert. It's like, if they don't see him coming, then they always just hoping they go away, basically. And Brandon Cooks is in that category. Like, people didn't really see it coming, so they just kind of would like if he went away, please. Like you say, I don't think he can get that value, but he's consistently ranked way too low in ADP, in even in DLF ranks, which are usually pretty good with this. Like, everyone wants him to just kind of go away, but he's not going away, guys. He's not going anywhere.
Yeah, it's really strange. And it's concussions, right? As soon as you hear multiple concussions, people go, it's absolutely terrifying. Do you remember when Luke Kuechly got hurt in, when was it, 2015, 2016? He missed a load of time and people went, oh, he might never play again, his career's over. And then basically played every single snap for the next three seasons. And and people still in their mind have got, oh yeah, he had all those concussions, so he missed loads of games. And it's just not true. You just remember headlines from years ago. So Brandon Cooks could easily come back and, you know, be a really productive player, right? And people will sort of,
he should not pay attention, based on what we know. And here's the thing: concussions are all really different. As a person, I'm really worried about Brandon Cooks having multiple concussions. I hope he makes the right life choices for his medical situation between him, his doctor, and his family. But if we're just playing fantasy, like, there's no reason to have him that low. Like you said, I mean, we don't know about his we're not his. And I don't mean by this, like, we're not doctors. We know enough to be concerned about concussions, but we're not in the room, so we don't really know the severity of the concussions, no matter what the hits look like. That's not the way concussions work. You could get mildly knocked and have a devastating concussion. Like, we know that about concussions, not to judge it by how violent it looked.
because that's just spreading misinformation. It's like you can get tapped and it causes a problem. That's why concussions are an issue. That's why we have to be, as humans, worried about people playing NFL football, because you get violent and non-violent collisions, and all of them could be on a scale of, you know, life-threatening to mild. And mild's a word we're not meant to use with concussions, I think, anymore. There's no thing as a mild concussion, but like something like Luke Kuechly can come back from, at least. So yeah, like as a fantasy player, it makes no sense to have Brandon Cooks solo.
I'm going to go and buy some more Brandon Cooks, because the thing I like trying. About Brandon Cooks, the three head coaches in the NFL that we know really like Brandon Cooks are Sean McVay, Bill Belichick, and Sean Payton. Right. That's a fairly good Mount Rushmore of minds in the NFL over the last few years. So if they all think he's really, really good, even if he is hurt, and obviously medical things, just like you said, we don't know, his talent is brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, fair reference there to the Mount Rushmore. To be honest, that's a good point. I never thought about looking at it that way. Like, if you're going to take three people's opinions on whether a player is good or not,
that's a pretty good start. Yeah,
probably three good names to start with, right? And yeah, I mean, I don't think he's going away unless, you know, he decides to go away, which I would completely support as a human being.
Yeah.
But if he chooses to play. I hope that's the right decision and he'll be good. It's that simple. For me as a fantasy player anyway. I've been trying to add him, but like you said, he's not easy to trade for. I think everyone that has him on their teams is probably people like us going, why don't you like this guy? But if you can find that one guy who's got him in your league and he's really worried or has him undervalued, then yeah, go get yourself some Brandon Cooks, man. But the person I have to ask.
The only English voice you hear is me.
Pretty much. You're the first English accent I've legitimately heard in a while, and it's really weird. I think it's going to be interesting for folks to hear me and you on the same podcast, because everyone thinks I sound English, but when I talk to English people, I don't sound English anymore.
So very few people sound as English as I do anyway.
Oh, you're fully English, man. Listen, you're Englished up to the nines. That's true.
And it's weird that we don't hear each other accent, right? Because we probably send each other texts most days. You know, we're normally chatting at some point, and it's we just tend not to do it over a microphone.
Yeah, it's weird. Most of my communication happens in text these days. And who saw that coming? The invention of all this great technology, and we're writing each other letters like we could have done back when texting happened. I always refer to that with video calls and stuff, and I know they're getting better, and Snap Face and chat blog and whatever. people are using that on their phones. But like, I still remember when we started to get video phones, but people still preferred texting. And I think that's just something about the nature of where we communicate. Like, we're always going to prefer, because it's quicker, simpler. You don't have to worry about how your hair looks, you know?
Well, we're all going to be doing work conference calls for the next few weeks. So, yeah.
Well, yeah, we better get used to it from now.
You're right. Connectivity is really interesting, right? And I think we've got a good viewpoint on this, because for various reasons, you and me sort of span the Atlantic and talk to various different people, and football brings us together with people around the world. So quite often I wake up in the morning and I talk to B, who IDP with B on Twitter. Lovely guy, really good. And we sort of cross over. He's in Hawaii. So he's going to bed and I'm waking up in the morning. And we have this weird sort of existence where we cross over in the twilight. But humanity has never been as connected as we are now. And people have never been as lonely as they are now. So communication is just happening in a very different way. And a lot of people get worried about that. I think it's a great thing because, you know, I get to share my love and my passion for football much easier. Because when I first started liking football 20 years ago, it was really hard for me to have those conversations. And now it's easy. So I think it's great.
Is there anything else you want to talk about before we get out of here?
I think we've touched on most of the things. We've done some pretty good value on a bunch of different players there. I think that's, I certainly learned a lot. So really interesting to get together, buddy.
Yeah, it's really great to get to actually literally talk to you for the first time and get to know your process a little bit better and get some interesting running back names to not trade for. I guess that's mostly what we found out, running backs that we don't want to trade for. Really appreciate you coming on. It's been great to talk to you. Hopefully we can do it again soon because, it's not something that happened before now, and it should have probably already happened a lot more. So I appreciate you coming on.
And well, as we go through draft season, we'll have a lot of conversations, but thanks for making the time. And I appreciate it's slightly difficult for you on Saturday afternoon. So thank you very much, sir.
No, it's actually remarkably easy. I'm just lazy. No, I really appreciate it. And thanks to everyone for checking Crossroads out. I will see you again next week. Take care. Bye.
Yeah. Chicken or crow, chicken or crow, crossing the road, go. Clicking a poll, Twitter is gold, player unfolds, so. Jake on the table and Nate on the play, so. Pete enumerates the plays, they're analytical. Picking my nose, don't really know if I like that. Picking their brains, got different lanes, but I like that. Picking these guys, all of these times, all of these nice stats. Picking apart, the film is an art, always a fight. Back and forth, there is no order, they disorder more and more. Because the players ain't no older, they some hoarders or some mortars. Dropping bombs without no borders, you got that I like Mordor. Peak grinding numbers like molars, I don't know anymore. I am at a crossroads. Chicken or crow, crossing the road, go. Clicking a poll, Twitter is gold, player unfolds, so. Jake on the table and Nate on the plays, though. Pete enumerates the plays, they're analytical. Chicken or crow, crossing the road, go. Clicking a poll, Twitter is gold, player unfolds, so. Jake on the table and Nate on the plays, though. Pete enumerates the plays, they're analytical.